Okay, good afternoon. Today is December 8th, Tuesday. It is 3 p.m. We are here in the Anchorage LIO. My name is Representative Reinbold, and we are having an informal hearing today on the prohibition of use of public education funds to influence elections. In particular, we are going to be talking about the State Board of Education and their potential of repealing 4AAC06.135. Today we are here to get both sides of the discussion on record. What I have in front of us here at the Anchorage LIO are several pieces of information. First of all, we have back 1991, we've got the letter of the Board of Consideration for regulators to public comment. We've also got the meeting notes from February 4th through the 6th, 1991. We've got April 16th notes from 1991. It was a letter to the board with attachments, including public comments. We've got the agenda from April 22nd through the 24th, 1991. And the unapproved minutes of the meeting from April 22nd through the 24th, 1991, and of a discussion that took place when this regulation for AAC 06.135 was put into place. We've got a complete package of information in regards to that. We also have in front of us the statutes. We have several different statutes that gave the State Board of Education authority. It's Alaska Statute 14.07.020. That's the duties of the deed. In addition, we have Alaska Statute 14.07.060, and this is in regards to regulation. This gave them the authority. It says the board shall adopt regulations that are necessary to carry out the provisions in the title. All regulations shall be adopted under AS 44.62, which is the Administrative Procedures Act. In addition, we have Alaska Statute 15.13.145. This is what is where the discussion is taking place, whether 4AAC 06.135, the regulation that prohibits use of public education funds in elections, if it's in conflict with AS 15.135.145. So we have copies of all of this here, including the 4AAC 06.135, which states a school district may not appropriate or spend school district money for the purpose of influencing the results of a public vote on an election, referendum, initiative, recall, or other elections involving candidates or for holders of public office. B, the restriction A of this section is not intended to interfere with the exercise of free speech by school board members or their personnel, or school district personnel. The authority, once again, is 14.07.020 in regards to this. So, what the agenda is today is at 3:05, APOC will be testifying. At approximately 3:15 to 3:20, Nathan McPherson will be testifying. At 3:30, we will take public input. And at 4 o'clock, maybe 4:30, Deed Assistant Commissioner Les Morse. He had a delay in his flight today, so he will be here as soon as he can get off that flight and get here today. So right now we are going to go ahead and open up the hearing. We are, like I stated before, we are trying to give the public and the board information whether 4AAC 06.135 complements or is in conflict, is ambiguous with AS 15.13.145. So with that, we are going to go ahead and have APOC speak And so if you could please put your name on record, if this is the with including your title, that would be terrific.
Good afternoon. My name is Paul Dauphiné. I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Public Offices Commission. First off, I would like to say that I am not authorized to speak for the commission. I can only speak for staff at this point. In regards to 1513-145, the statute that APOC administers money of the state and its political subdivisions, from our perspective, this is, from a staff perspective, this is reasonably straightforward. The commission has interpreted this statute in this manner for at least the last 10 years in terms of advisory opinions and complaints. Looking at the regulation in question, 4AAC 6135, I don't see it, and staff doesn't necessarily see it as a conflict. It sees the regulation as more stringent than the statute. So in that respect, for a school board or district to stay within their own regulation would keep them well within APOC's statutory guidance. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions, ma'am.
Okay, thank you very much. I appreciate your willingness to put this on record. What I'd like to ask you is, what are the rules that surround if let's say, a school district spends more than $500 on to influence in any way an election or an initiative or a bond, do they need to register with APOC?
Yes.
Can you get into a little bit of the detail?
Well, in two ways. First of all, if they are going to make an appropriation of any amount to influence an election, in this matter, we're probably talking more about bond issues, they would have to report to the commission on forms prescribed by the commission as per, I can't recall the statute off the top of my head, 1513-040, I believe would be the reporting requirements. If they make an independent expenditure, they would have to report as per the requirements of 1513-135, which references 1513-040 and 1513-100 and 110.
Okay, and would you mind getting me those numbers? I couldn't write them down fast enough.
I said 030 earlier, and I was incorrect. It's 040, 15.13.040, which is the statute titled Contributions, Expenditures, and Supplying of Services to be Reported. If they are going to make an independent expenditure, they would report as required by 15.13.135, which references 040 and references 15.13.100, which is expenditures before filing, and 15.13.110, filing of reports.
Outstanding. And can you answer the question, have any groups, like any school district, first of all, how long have you been in the position?
I've been in the position approximately 5 years.
5 years. And have any groups in the time that you've worked at APOC, do you have a list of those groups?
We have had the Bellevue School District, and the Fairbanks North Star Borough School District register as entities in 2013, Haynes School District as an entity in 2014. We have had a number of school boards or school districts have political action committees, and those committees have reported, and those are between 2012 and present. Friends of Kodiak High School, Matsu Education Association, School Bonds Yes, Education Support Association, and the Great Alaskan Schools, pardon me. They've all registered as PACs and have reported as PACs.
So
they're allowed to do.
So Great Alaska Schools is a PAC?
They registered in 2012 and 2014. They do not have a current registration that I was able to find.
Okay. Great. So I'm going to go ahead and go around the room really quickly, recognize David Boyle, David Meese, and Ashton Compton. And I forgot to recognize Nathan McPherson, who's next to testify. He's online at this time. Do any of you all have questions at this time for the executive director?
I have a question on the Great Alaska Schools. Mm-hmm. I believe they registered in September of last year as an independent expenditure group, and that was the first time they registered.
I have them as,
not sure, but
I have them registered in 2012 and 2014. In September last year would be 2014.
Right. Okay.
I have a question.
David?
Yeah, sorry.
Just say your name before you speak.
David Meese. When you're talking about doing the APOC paperwork, expenditure of any amount of money, you had a very short list of people that had registered. Does that mean that, you know, how does that work? Like if we, I'm the Kodiak Island Borough School District and I would like to build a new high school and I would like the voters to vote for my high school. What do I need to do in the APOC process to keep myself within the limits of the law?
Before you even deal with APOC, you have to have that money specifically appropriated through the authority that can appropriate the funds. The school district cannot by itself appropriate the funds. It has to be appropriated through the municipality.
Okay, so I would go to my assembly. I would get the funds appropriated for the ballot proposition campaign, or I'm
to,
fuzzy on that.
It's for a school district or any other political subdivision of a state can be used to influence the outcome of a ballot proposition or question.
Okay. And what the term influenced would be, is that like a concrete term or is that a vague term?
That's a vague term. That's a case by case.
Okay. So if I was
if you're going to go, we want you to vote for this, you're trying to influence an election.
Okay, and if I don't tell you that you should vote for this and I give you information that is rosy or it's not, I mean, I guess that's the fuzzy part of the law that I'm trying to figure out if that's the reason that this was written.
Money held by an entity may be used to disseminate information about the time and place of an election and to hold an election, to provide the public with nonpartisan information about a ballot proposition or question, nonpartisan information, and about all the candidates seeking election, which wouldn't apply in this case. And when an expenditure of money is authorized and is used to influence the outcome of an election, the expenditure shall be reported to the commission in the same manner as an individual is required to report. Nonpartisan information. This is yes. This is what a yes vote would mean. This is what a no vote would mean. It's in no way encouraging someone to vote one way or the other.
It has to present both sides.
Yes.
So if it only presents one side, it's partisan?
If it can be reasonably construed as to influence someone to vote a particular way, it would not be considered educational or nonpartisan.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Okay, and thank you very much. Executive Director, I would like, if you are comfortable, there was a memo from Marjorie Odland, and at the time, this was a memo to Steve Hull, the Deputy Commissioner of Department of Education. This was advice at the time when there was discussions regarding this, whether this regulation needed to be put in place. And I'm wondering if you were comfortable discussing some of the case law that was mentioned in regards to this No.
I'm really not.
No? Okay.
And it's not that I'm not comfortable. I don't know enough to discuss intelligently. So I'm really not qualified.
Okay. All righty. Well, I will. I'm going to be discussing this later on in the hearing today because there's quite a history in Alaska. Are you comfortable talking about the one lawsuit that was in Alaska in the mid-90s?
I'm comfortable speaking about commission decisions.
Okay.
But when it comes to lawsuits, I'm not familiar with any regarding this particular matter.
Okay. All right. Sounds good. I will definitely be bringing this up later. Is there any decisions that you think would be helpful in enlightening
the commission over several years has made several decisions. And if you just excuse me a moment while I go through my paper. In June of 1997, there was informal advice given regarding the definition of nonpartisan. For example, and I'm quoting from this July 24, 1998 definition. For example, with respect to a school bond ballot question, a nonpartisan advertisement would set out the benefits and of an affirmative vote. It would also state the cost of the measure. In complaint 0814CD, Kraft versus DNR, this was a complaint filed before APOC alleging that the State Department of Natural Resources used state monies to influence ballot measure for the Clean Water Initiative. In that complaint, the complainant alleged that the governor used state funds to influence. The commission said, in this case, as soon as the governor said, I'm taking my, and the quote is, I'm taking my governor's hat off, she was then speaking as an individual, not as the governor, and could not show her ability to speak freely. She said personally, Prop 4, I would vote no. In that case, the commission said, speaking as an individual, that's her right. So she was not using. That goes to the part of the regulation that says, the current regulation under discussion that says, notwithstanding all of the above, this doesn't affect people's ability to participate in free speech. We also have a complaint, 0804CD Griswold versus the City of Homer. In this matter, it deals with a partisan approach. The issue in this case is whether the brochure, which was dealing with a downtown renovation, constituted nonpartisan information that may be provided to the public about a ballot proposition without a specific appropriation. In this decision, the commission considered whether the overall intent of the materials appeared intended to elicit the conclusion from the audience that voting yes on the ballot measure would have negative ramifications. Based on the language of 1513.145 and the applicable regulation, the commission in this case focused on whether the brochure was a neutral ballot summary or the overall intent. In this case, the City of Homer was found to be in violation. Because considered in its entirety, it placed a yes vote for the project in a more favorable light than a no vote.
Okay. That's that balance thing we were talking about earlier.
Right. We also have a 2004 complaint, Palmer versus the Juneau School Board. This is APOC complaint 0403CD. In this case, for a school district to lawfully spend funds to influence the outcome of an election as provided in 1513.145, it must allocate funds. Because the Juneau School Board did not follow this procedure, it may not spend funds to influence the high school construction measure at the time. However, it is free to spend funds to provide nonpartisan information about the measure. And you can see that the commission's been very consistent. This is what the statute says. This is how they rule. It's partisan or it's not partisan based on that definition.
Could I ask a question, Representative?
Sure.
When you said
your name, please.
Yeah, sorry, David Nace. When you said they didn't allocate the funds, that was the Juneau School District one.
Mm-hmm.
Was that the thing we were talking about earlier where they had to go to assembly and ask for the funds and they hadn't done that?
Apparently. I mean, I just read this morning.
Oh, okay.
So
yeah.
They had a board policy in effect at the time. And remember, this is 11 years ago.
Right.
This does not appear to have gone through the municipality.
Okay, so
looks like the board.
They that one that would be the they probably had a policy and they just continued it on and
right.
failed to go to the assembly.
Right.
Okay. Thank you.
And I have materials going back to 1991, but I won't just go over them just for the sake of going over them. Does that help?
It does help. Did anybody else have any?
Well, I was.
Okay.
Yeah, does the APOC have a position on whether this? It's not a statute; it's regulation. Helps you or hurts you in the performance of what you do?
Which regulation? Are we
the
Board of Education.
The Board of Education.
APOC staff takes no position on that regulation.
Can I ask a question in a different way? Would you say it's ambiguous? Would you say that it's in conflict, or would you say it actually complements the statute?
From my perspective, it complements the statute by taking a statewide issue, using state money or money of a political subdivision of the state, which is defined how you can do it in this statute, and making that a much tighter type of control with the education regulation. So I see it being subordinate to and much tighter than the 15-13-135.
Excellent, because I think it's very, very important at any time, but now with the time of fiscal crisis where every dollar matters, I think to preserve the integrity of the use of public funds is very, very important. So I do appreciate that. I'm going to divert just for a moment, and there was an ad that I saved. I did not bring it with me today. I will get it to you. But it was on front page of the Alaska Daily News, if I'm remembering properly, and it was a ProPebble ad, and it looked and appeared to be funded by the Anchorage School District. Did you say Anchorage School District has registered as a entity?
No. East, Fairbanks, North Star Borough, and Haines.
Okay, it's just that's just a diversion, but it was something I meant.
That recent?
It was a couple of years ago. I need to get the date, the time, the place. But it was just one of those things that years ago this was just a question that I had whether they need to be checked in regards to that. If they did post this, if this was an Anchorage School District, was this neutral or was this slanted?
And,
okay, and I will definitely get that information to you. So with that, is there anything, David?
Yeah, it's just a clarifier.
Okay.
So the Anchorage School District has never registered.
That I'm aware of.
That you're aware of. And so their informational campaigns they've run in the neighborhood of $45,000 to $60,000 for the last 10 or 12 years. In your opinion, should they have been registering that, or you'd have to see them?
I can't recall any advertisements, which doesn't mean they weren't there. I'm not aware of any.
But if they have a budget for an ad campaign, they were supposed to have gone to the assembly to get it approved.
That's the body that approves the budget.
Okay. So as long as it's in the budget and it's specifically in the budget. Thank you.
In addition, I'm going to, this is Rep. Reimbold talking, but it does still have to be neutral and nonpartisan.
If you have a specific budgetary line that's been approved, then you can advocate. That's the way this reads. Subparagraph B, money held by an entity identified above of this section may be used to influence the outcome of an election concerning a ballot proposition or question, a bond issue, but only if funds have been specifically appropriated for that purpose by a state law or municipal ordinance. Approving the budget would be the municipal ordinance. However, money held by an entity may be used to disseminate nonpartisan information. So they can have it in their, they can move within their budget to provide nonpartisan information and education about educational material regarding time and place of an election. They can only influence if they have a specific appropriation.
Okay, and I would like to, at this time, take the opportunity to read a historical background in regards to this. This is dated April 16, 1991, file 91.118. It's to the State Board of Education members from the Acting Commissioner, Steve H-O-L-E. And it's from Rosemary, H-A-G-E-V-I-G. Basically, it says, at the February meeting, Steve Hole explained that the rationale of the department with respect to the need for these regulations, he told the board that in some school districts, funds were being inappropriately spent on election activities to resist recall of local board members or to promote the position of a local board on petitions for referendum or initiatives. The matter of using funds to promote bond issues was discussed. And Superintendent Bruce Johnson told the board that the local district needed to be able to support the bonds for school construction. Other comments have been received pertaining to possible future impact of regulations on free speech. One respondent suggested that the Anchorage model be considered where neutral materials with factual answers related to information were all permitted, but advocacy was not. In response to the public comment, the word of the proposed language has been revised to eliminate the reference to the bond issue in the elections. And the final comment on this was to adopt the regulation. To adopt the regulations revised by the board in response to public response or postpone the action, the department recommended that it was recommended that the board adopt the regulation for AAC, and it was adopted the regulation as we as for AAC 06.135, a school district may not appropriate or spend school district money for the purpose of influence the result of a public vote on a referendum initiative, recall, or any other election affecting a candidacy for public office. The restrictions specified in this section are not intended to restrict board members from expressing their free speech. That was a memo that I wanted to make sure that you guys were aware of, and to make sure that there was an integrity in use of public education funds to gain public confidence in the education process. So part of the history back then. Yes.
Yeah, my David Meese again. So I'm just curious, why would there be an Alaska statute and a state school board regulation? Who's in charge of the money to the schools? Once the state obviously allocates the money to the schools and the schools spend it, because it's a grant, what is it, a block grant funding. So at what point is the reason that regulation, in your opinion, the reason that regulation would be there is to kind of have the state of Alaska have two eyes on the money, one on its allocation?
In all honesty, I have no idea.
Okay. Is it, so it's kind of like.
You're asking me to speculate.
I don't want you to speculate on that.
For the kind of 1991, and I really can't comment on that.
Yeah, they just had a couple of lawsuits that were costing a lot of money at that time.
Okay. All right. Last question, then I got to get to the next public testimony or the invited testimony.
David Boyle, Alaska Policy Forum. I have a question for the executive director. If a school district has to file APOC expense reports for bond, let's say bond elections, then should they not also be registered, like some of the other school district conventions are?
That would make sense. However, there are many instances where that's not necessarily required. So to give you an ironclad answer right now, I can't.
Okay, I was just curious because you mentioned, I think, four or five districts that, like Homer, et cetera, that were registered as whatever.
Yeah, they're registered as entities.
Entities. I was wondering why the Anchorage School District was not registered.
An entity. Okay. I don't know.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, so let's move on. Thank you very, very much. I definitely appreciate you being here. I know you're very, very short-staffed, as I am, and I know it was very, very great that you ended up taking time to not only to call in but to be here in person. So we very much appreciate it. If there's any notes or any follow-up that you want to submit to make sure there's clarity on the record, that would be helpful.
I'm going to stay just to listen to the public testimony in case they have any questions before I leave.
Wow. Thank you very much. Okay, with that, we're going to move on to Mr. McPherson. Could you please state your name and title, however you wish to state it, and go ahead and state your comments as invited testimony, please?
Yes, I'm Nathan McPherson. I'm an attorney based in the Mat-Su Valley, and I have a nationwide constitution and tax defense practice. And I'd like to start off by clarifying one of the questions that was asked of the last speaker, why there would be a regulation as well as a statute. And the state legislature, of course, passed this statute, and then the regulation is implementing that statute with respect to deed. And so the design of a regulation is to clarify how the department is to implement this statute. And that's exactly what this is, and I agree with the comment that this regulation simply implements or clarifies specifically how it is to be interpreted, how it is to be carried out by the Department of Education and Early Development. And I'd like to then give some background. Alaska Constitution, Article 9, Section 6, states that no public money is to be used for anything but a public purpose. That's a pretty sort of obvious conclusion that if the state or local government has collected money from the people in the form of taxes, that money that's therefore public money is not to be used for a private purpose. It's to be used only for a public purpose. Well, what exactly is a public purpose? One judicial decision I reviewed gave this definition. Essentially, public purpose depends on what the people expect and want their government to do for the society as a whole. So in the context of schools, what does society expect and want the schools to do? Does society, do the people of Alaska expect our schools to tell us how we should vote in an election or to tell us that there is an election? And the background of this regulation, as I understand, comes from in the late 80s or early 90s, that certain school districts were using public money, using this taxpayer money that was given to the schools, and they were using it to defend candidates of the school board who were up for recall. So here we have elected officials using taxpayer money to keep their jobs. Is that a public purpose? So we elect somebody into office, and then that person uses our money to stay in office. And looking at the background of this around the country, the main place where this issue comes up is in school bond issues. And there we have public officials using public money that they got from the issuance of bonds to issue new bonds. In other words, they take our money, and then they want to use our money to keep taking more of our money. And that's where a survey did shows that basically every state that I found has laws in place that are in many cases even more pointed in stating that no school, let alone any other government entity or official, but specifically also schools, may not use public money to influence an election of any kind. The state statute, of course, on its face states that this is broadly for elected officials, and then the regulation at issue here clarifies that it applies not only to elected officials, but also to things like bond measures, propositions, et cetera, any kind of thing that is up for a vote. And it stands to reason that if something is up to a vote of the people individually, each of us votes individually, that we don't want our taxpayer money to be used to influence the election, we might as well just have the school board members vote for us, and why even bother going to the polls if that's going to be the case? That the election is there because we've determined as society that each one of us individually ought to vote on this issue. And as I stated, around the country there are judicial decisions that, and this was cited in the background of when this regulation was enacted in, I believe it was 1991, that if you look judicial decisions not only from Alaska but around the country, they are all pointing the same direction, that it is a prohibition on the use of public funds to take a position or advocate one way or another. And that's what we call partisan, which is defined in another regulation. But partisan, in effect, means saying to vote yes or to vote no, to vote for one candidate or another candidate. This issue is of such importance that California, and I know views go both ways on things California lawmakers do, but this is from a policy paper out of California. Because public tax monies belong to both proponents and opponents of a bond measure, it is unfair to force opponents of the measure to lend financial support to the proponents. And that, going again to the bond measure, where this often comes up, is with bond measures. Public officials who violate the following rules, which are the rules in California, may be subject to civil fines or criminal penalties, and violation of these rules could cause the election to be invalidated. And this policy paper says, warning, state law provides that any person who uses public funds or resources to support a bond measure may face imprisonment in county jail for up to 1 year, a fine of up to $1,000 or both, or imprisonment for 16 months, 2 years, or 3 years in state prison. And note this part, it goes on, though. So it's not just California. It goes on, criminal penalties for misuse of federal funds may include up to 25 years in federal prison. Officials can also be held personally liable to reimburse the public agency for any misspent funds. Folks, California lawmakers are taking this very seriously, and in fact, federal lawmakers are taking this seriously. And since 1919, there has been a federal law prohibiting federal employees or government officials from lobbying. This is 18 United States Code Section 1913. And that there is a Department of Justice interpretation of this federal statute that says federal employees are prohibited from participating in, quote, grassroots efforts to encourage the public to even contact their representatives to advocate for a position. In other words, if you're an elected official or employed by the government and you're using government funds and you're using your office or your title, your position in the government, you may not be influencing public opinion on something the public is to vote for. It's up to each individual citizen. Furthermore, what I've seen of why certain people want this regulation to be repealed is that it contradicts or conflicts with the state statute because it's taking away rights from the school district. And that is completely erroneous because school districts have no rights. Government officials in their official capacity have no rights. The government does not have rights. The people have the rights. That's in the Declaration of Independence, that the people have the rights and we grant certain specific authority to the government to act. The government doesn't have rights, it has specific authority. So perhaps we should put it to a vote of the people, but do the people think that we've granted the authority to the school districts to use school money to advocate one way or another on something that's going up to public vote? Or do we authorize the schools to provide education to children? And that education itself ought to be nonpartisan, right? That's been a big thing with Common Core and so forth, certain curriculum advocating one way or another in political things. So the bottom line, I believe after analyzing both the statute, the regulations, the judicial history, the history of why this regulation was passed, that it complements and clarifies the state statute. It implements the state statute as a regulation ought to, and therefore it should not be repealed. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. McPherson. We have a question. Would you like to take a question from David Neese?
Certainly.
All right. So advocating for or against a bond measure or something like that is, in your opinion, a bad use of public funds to get more public dollars. The municipality of Anchorage exempts the school superintendent and the mayor from not advocating. In other words, they give them permission to advocate in city charter for a bond or against a bond measure, which is kind of unique in Alaska. Is that something that this regulation supports, contradicts, something they should look at?
Well, in this case, you're stating that the lawmakers at that level have specifically authorized certain actions. That's correct?
Yeah, that's correct. They've allowed the mayor and the superintendent of schools in Anchorage to be lobbyists for bonds or bond measures or ballot positions.
If it is specifically authorized by that, then I would not see a conflict, because this regulation is implementing state law, and the state law, as I think was pointed out earlier, specifically authorizes that if the local authority has specifically authorized something in their legislative body, then that is permitted.
Thank you.
Okay. With that, Mr. McPherson, are you comfortable, are you aware enough about it was called a Yes for Recall. It was a small group formed to coordinate the recall efforts by Anchorage School Board members, Walter Featherly, Carol Stopel, Kabat Christensen, and Dorothy Cox. These petitions were circulated and signatures were collected on each candidate. The Anchorage Municipal Clerk originally rejected the vast majority of petitions and claimed that the group had failed to notify the municipality of Anchorage. YFR filed a lawsuit against the municipality of Anchorage and won. The recall election was set. The Anchorage City Council decided that YFR, so that's Yes for Recall, was a public interest group and picked up the most YFR's litigation against the municipality. I could go on and talk more in detail in regards to this, but I'm wondering the school board members were recalled, formed a group called Citizen Representation for Government, which was headed by Nick Bagage and Sheila Slady, and it attempted to get an injunction. The CFRG could not challenge the signatures on the original position, so they decided to go after the litigation costs. Ferguson, and it was the MOA versus the Citizen for Representative Government, 2D-1058 was about the resolution of legal costs based on the constitutive public interest group, CFRG. I'm going to just ask if you have any knowledge of that case and if you can weigh in regards to that case.
I've not read that case, but I'm generally aware that the reason this regulation was adopted in the first place was because school board members were using school funds to keep their jobs in effect, to keep their elected positions, and that it was the outcry over that. And I believe it was even inside of the Department of Education that action was initially taken to adopt this regulation. I'm not certain about that, but that's my understanding. So I don't have specific knowledge of that case, other than that what went on with that is the reason we have this regulation to begin with.
Okay, thank you. Basically, what my understanding is that the provisions in the administrative code are due to the same circumstance that led to Ferguson versus the MOA. And there were significant political expenditures from the BSA, and granted the Anchor School related to the recall election discussed in Ferguson and MOA. So bottom line, it's created a tremendous amount of controversy back in the mid-1990s in regards to this. So by the time Ferguson MOA was decided, 4AAC 06.135 was in place. They were trying to prevent drain of local finance and school finances on future recalls, so an effort to protect public monies. And for other reasons, the Deputy Commissioner, Steve Hole, sought legal opinion from Margie Odland, if that's a memo I read earlier, from the Attorney General. And due to lack of clarity on the issue, the Attorney General worked with the Deputy Commissioner, Steve Hole, and that's why this regulation was 4AAC 06.135. It was placed into administrative code by the Alaska State Board of Education. So just, I didn't know if you wanted to weigh on any more in regards to that or not. I'm going to be talking about public comments from 1991 shortly, but if there was anything you wanted to add, you know, in your final closing comments of whether you think this is in conflict, if there's ambiguity, or if this complements the statute in place, that would be helpful.
Certainly, yeah, that use of public funds, again, what is public purpose? The definition from one case I read was it's what the public expects the government to do with the money. And therefore, if we're funding schools, we don't expect it to be used for political campaigning, whether it be for the election or recall of board members, whether it be for ballot propositions, whether it be for anything political that is going up to a vote of the people. When you, as a taxpayer, understand that your money is going to fund the schools, you expect it to be used to educate children, not for political campaigning. Another point to clarify this is equal access. Or we're generally aware that public airways have to give equal time to all candidates, or in the case of two candidates, both candidates. You can't have public airways. It's FCC rules only allowing ads for one candidate and not for another. And that's sort of the same thing. If we're using public funds that are going for promoting a campaign, it needs to go then for both sides, and that's why the law says, and this regulation says, it has to be nonpartisan. It can't be advocating one way or another. It just simply makes sense. I see that this clarifies the statute rather than conflicting with it. The case there in Anchorage is very specific, and it's also narrowly tailored to two positions, those being sort of the chief executive of the little organizations there, and not anybody and everybody. It's not allowing teachers, it's not allowing school board members, et cetera. That's a very narrowly tailored and passed by the lawmakers in that jurisdiction, so I don't see a conflict there. I see no reason to repeal this, especially with the political arena right now, with all sorts of issues going on. This isn't where we need to be spending money. We need to be spending money on education and keep it there. Thank you.
One final question from David Meese.
Yes.
When the original regulation was written, they included the restrictions specific in this section are not intended to prevent a school district from appropriating or spending money to provide instructional election material which is neutral in content or published with the purpose of providing a forum in which all sides of the election issue are presented. That was struck out by the state school board. Does that neutral and all sides presented, would that be a better thing to have in there? It was kind of an interesting thing to drop out.
Probably. I don't know, but this just strikes me that a reason that might have been struck out was because it sounds like now we're just going to have one side of the page be in favor and one side of the page be against, whereas what I read of the regulation now is that it allows sort of what the Department of Elections gets. I got in the mail a couple months ago, right before this last election, a booklet from the state of Alaska saying, here's where you go to vote, here are the candidates, here are the ballot measures, whatever, you know, here's the text of it, a yes means this, a no means that. That sort of informational thing. And it is a public policy to encourage participation in elections. That the courts have uniformly held that in our Republican form of government, we want people to show up and vote, and so use of public money to encourage people to show up and vote, let them know the time, the date, the place, what they're going to be voting for, give them information on how to become informed, who's running, what are the initiatives, et cetera. Use of public money for that is appropriate public policy.
Okay. I'm going to recognize.
This is Carl Dothan, I'm the Executive Director of the Public Options Commission. What I'm getting from this is that you all seem to think that the authority for this regulation, for AAC 06135, derives from AS 1513 145. That's incorrect. The authority for this stat, this regulation derives from 14.07.020 and 14.07.060. So when you're talking about the statute, that's the one, those are the two you need to address in relation to the authority for this regulation, not 1513.
Correct. It's the Administrative Procedure Act that gave them the authority to act on the regulation.
14, AS 14.07
is not... The 020? Is that...
Right.
Okay, so I'll read it.
020.
Right, I got 020 in front of me.
And the other one is 060.
Okay, right. And I'll, just for clarity, I'm going to put these on the record. AS 14.070020, this is the duties of the department. The department shall exercise general supervision over the public schools in the state except the University of Alaska. 2, study the conditions and needs of the public schools of the state, adopt, recommend plans, administer, and evaluate grants to improve school performance awarded under AS 14.03.125 and adopt regulations for the improvement of public schools. 3, public advisory and consultative services to all public schools, governing bodies, and personnel. 4, prescribe by regulation a minimum course of study for the public schools. The regulation must provide for that. If a course in American Sign Language is given, the course shall be given as a credit course in a foreign language. 5, establish in coordination with Department of Health and Social Services a program for the continuing education of children who are held in detention facilities in the state during period of detention. 6, accredit those public schools that meet accreditation standards prescribed by regulation by the department. These regulations shall be adopted by the department and presented to the legislature during the first 10 days of regular session and become effective 45 days after the presentation of the end of the session, whichever is earlier, unless it is approved by a resolution in concurrence with the majority of members of each house. 7, prescribed by regulation after consultation with the state fire marshal and the state sanitarian standards that will assure helpful and safe conditions in the public and private schools for the state, including requirement of physical examinations, immunizations in pre-elementary schools. The standards for private schools may not be more stringent than those for public schools. And 8, exercise general supervision over pre-elementary schools that receive direct state or federal funding. That was AS 14.07.020. I'm also going to quickly read 14.07.060, 14.07.060 regulations. It says the board shall adopt regulations that are necessary to correct the provisions of this title. All regulations shall be adopted under AS 44.62, which is the Administrative Procedures Act. Now, what we're trying to decide here today is whether AS 15.13.145, that statute, which is money in state and its political subdivisions, is in conflict with the statute 04. And this is administrative code 06.135. Put on the record again. Okay. With that, was there any final comments? Okay, Mr. McPherson, thank you very, very much. For your comments today. We really appreciate you doing your research and weighing in on this issue today. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, so it's 3:55 right now. We are waiting right now on the Department of Early Development, Education Early Development. They are getting off the plane right now. I received a text. So right now we're just going to... wait just a few, it'll probably be put on hold for about 15 minutes, maybe 30 minutes, but I'm going to take a little bit of time right now to read in some public testimony from Kevin Pat Parnell. He was a representative in Midtown back February 23rd, 1991. I just thought this would be fun for historical record. This was to Steve Hull, the acting commissioner. Thank you very much for being here. So the Anchorage has a law covering this point, which is specific. One element which needs to be addressed is the use of staff during community meetings or community council meetings. Even the payment for hours spent on these public meetings advocating one side or the other is an issue to constituents' advocacy, which is in violation with the Anchorage Ordinance. Neutral materials, factual answers, and related information are all permitted. Advocacy is not. This does not restrict information which will show the good that will come from an issue being adopted by the community. A bond which will allow for asbestos removal or added school can be discussed with the benefits as shown to be statistically or in other ways which are verifiable and accurate. If you not considered the court case in Anchorage on this topic, you might give it some review to show why this particular regulation or law is even needed to ensure the efficacy of the topic and the maintenance of integrity by our public servants. And that was by Kevin Pat Purnell. He was in District 10. That was on February 23rd, 1991. So I did want to also enter into public comments and into this hearing that on page 13, which this package we're going to upload this package to BASIS, but discussion following Kathy Cuddy. This is on page 13. She told the board that she was opposed to the recommendation of the department to remove the references to bond elections. She stated that her preference was to reinsert the original language. She stated that in her experience, those in the community who oppose such elections are at a disadvantage with respect to finances. She reiterated that she was opposed to spending public funds to influence votes for additional public funds, regardless of the project. So that was just a quote from that page. And that, like I said, that will be uploaded to BASIS, hopefully within the next 24 hours. Okay, with that, we're going to go ahead and take a break and come back into this hearing in approximately 25 minutes or as soon as Veed arrives here. Yes, I'm taking public testimony, and actually with that, I'll go ahead and take that right now. So just one second, just let me pause this meeting just for about 2 minutes, make sure that we're not unmuted online, and then I'll take your public comments. Thanks for the reminder. Okay, so we still are on record. So if we could go ahead and start with public testimony. There's a few people in here to testify. So with that, who would like to go first?
I will. Okay. David Neese speaking for myself. This has been very interesting, Representative Reinbold. As you know, it seems to be there are a lot of benefits to this particular regulation being in effect. You could probably say it's prevented everything that it was wanted to prevent since it's been enacted, because you don't have any casework anywhere where there's been a violation of this particular regulation. So to remove it because it's not working, you'd have to prove that it wasn't working, I think. The main thing is that this, like all laws, was reactionary. There was an issue in the early 90s with public school monies being spent for other things other than public schooling, and the public was unhappy about it, and the state board reacted because they have supervision over those public funds. So the public funds part of it is still being used for informational campaigns. They are still subject to APOC reporting. They are still up to interpretation whether or not they are actually allowed to have a position. In the last election on the marijuana issue, the Fairbanks North Star Borough had asked APOC for an opinion on whether they could even pass a board referendum saying that they were opposed to marijuana in the state of Alaska. APOC said yes, they could. They had to go ahead and use their normal channels of distribution. They couldn't do anything special. And when they went down to the state school board association, their attorney actually indicated that no, they can't. That would leave them open to a lawsuit. So you have an interesting back and forth on this about where exactly that ball bounces when you advocate for something instead of being neutral. The neutral nature of it seems to be up to a little bit of debate. I have rarely seen any materials distributed by any school district or city that did not say this is going to have a positive effect on our community. And there's I think the Homer case was a really good one, that APOC, the Griswold case, where they looked at the thing and said, in the total realm of what you're looking at on the materials distributed, was it positive in nature for passing the bond or neutral? And that's one of the things that this law helps clarify, so that if somebody has an issue, then they can use this regulation. I like the fact that the state board and the commissioner have oversight. They have a regulation in place so they can turn around and go like, no, we're kind of tying your hands on this. And the objection to having your hands tied seems to be coming from more of a issue that was on an initiative rather than a bond or any of the other things that are in here. I like the policy as it is set in place, because it does say, here are the rules. You can't violate them. If you violate them, then you're breaking the law. APOC kind of tracks the money. The public money for a public purpose can be debated whether or not advocating for bonds is entirely neutral if you're only presenting one side of it. I think it's a very good measure to have this on the books. Removing it is the going back to where we were in 1990, where you can have a school board decide that it's really important that we defend these members with our dollars that the state gives us, so that we can go to court and pay for the lawyer without our money. And the case that you cited, actually, the city lost the lawsuit. They could not recoup the $57,000, which at that time was approximately, I think, 200 students worth of money that they had expended on the lawsuit to take it all the way to the Alaska Supreme Court. So it's interesting that you would have this as a repeal, in that if it's been working fine since 1991, then why would you remove it? Because there's a reason it appeared. All laws and regulations are reactionary. This is reaction to something that happened, and I don't see anything good coming out of it if you remove it, because it is meant to be a barrier. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your comments. Next.
Representative Reinbold, David Boyle with the Alaska Policy Forum. I really want to thank you for having this hearing today. It's one of those things that usually goes under the radar, and a lot of people don't pay attention to it until following whatever, if this is repealed 2 to 3, 4, or 5 years from now, people will really be upset that we don't have a regulation / statute to provide this type of restriction. Anyway, David Boyle with the Alaska Policy Forum. I guess I would title my commentary here today, "Don't Fix It If It Ain't Broke." And this is what I don't understand by the Department of Education Early Development. Says there's a conflict between the APOC statute regulation and the current regulation that DEED wants to do away with. There really is no conflict between the two. As the executive director of APOC said, Mr. Neese said, that it's actually clarifies and delineates it even more so, which is the purpose, as you know, of a regulation. Let's go back and look at what was the intent of the legislature when they appropriate money for education. Is it to educate the children of this state, or is it to provide money so that people can actually lobby for school bonds, other resolutions and propositions on the ballot? Today, you know, as I know you're definitely aware, we have a very dire fiscal crisis in this state. We have to watch every little copper penny that we spend. For example, in the Anchorage School District just voted to expend $60,000 on promoting the bond issue on the next ballot in April, $60,000. And that comes from two departments, communications and another one. That is money that's being taken out of the classroom to educate our Anchorage students. Importantly, we really need a bright demarcation point between what is neutral and nonpartisan in elections. If this regulation is done away with, it takes that clean demarcation line away, and then things become really fuzzy. And then you can get involved, engaged in lawsuits, et cetera, and we definitely don't need that. And, if, you know, I know the proponents of taking this away would say, well, when we go out and provide information on a bond issue, it's neutral. We're just stating here is what it's going to cost the taxpayers, here's what it will do. However, a ballot proposition is actually like a debate. There are two sides to every issue, the pro and the con. So if information is only being provided from one side of this issue, for example, the Anchorage School District on bonds, then it is advocacy, and it's actually influencing the outcome of the election, whether it be directly or indirectly or even subliminally. The other side of the issue should also have access to public dollars to provide the other side of the issue. For example, let's say there's a school that has a bond to remodel the entire school. The Anchorage School District will put up a sign that says, here how much it's costing, here's how much it's what we're going to do with it. Well, on the other side of the issue, people should be able to have another sign provided by the government funds that says, here's how much it's going to cost you, and not for just this year, but for the next 20 years. And here's, for example, this is a waste of money, let's say, because the school is only half filled, and it maybe should be considered closing it. Those are the things we never hear when they're marketing their bond issues. So furthermore, let's look at some issues like I think Mr. Neese alluded to in the past, in that one of the school boards in the state wanted to use their monies to promote opposition against marijuana. So can a school district use education dollars to support and oppose non-education ballot propositions? And if they can, where does this stop? Can they support marijuana ballot issues or oppose them? LGBT ballot issues? Raising the tax cap here in Anchorage? Which I'm sure I know where the school district would be on that side of that issue. Or can they even oppose or support constitutional amendments that would provide education vouchers? If they can do one thing on bond issues and on marijuana, they can do almost anything. Another issue to be asked then, if the Department of Education can do this, what can the other departments in the state do? Can the Department of Fish and Game promote propositions that are on the ballot to restrict fishing for halibut and salmon? Can the Department of Law use its funds to promote or oppose a certain ballot issue? For example, constitutional amendment on school vouchers. These are the issues, the sticky issues we get into. And if that's the case, I was mentioning other departments. If the Department of Education is allowed to do away with this regulation, and then school districts can use their education dollars to promote, influence elections, which is what they really do when they market it, then can other departments like the Department of Law use their monies to support or oppose propositions on the ballot? And the Department of Fish and Game use their funds to oppose or support, for example, fish or game regulations on the ballot? Now you're going down a real dark trail, I do believe. So it's not just education; it's all the rest of the departments in this state. They should only be using their public funds for what they were intended, and stay off the ballot. So I guess it would say in closing that you're really going to open a Pandora's box. There is really no conflict between the regulation and the APOC statute. Regulation actually delineates and defines the law much more clearly. And with that, I want to thank you for having this hearing. Thank you for letting me speak.
Thank you for your comments. That was one issue that I've actually done a legal inquiry in as well. If it's okay for education, then is it okay for DNR? Is it okay for fish and game? Is it okay for on and on and on and on and on? So I mean, is this going to completely open up Pandora's box? And I think that the executive director, who I don't like to speak for anybody, he was very clear that this was, from my interpretation of what he said, that this complements the law. It doesn't conflict with the law. So with that, I have failed to mention a few people. Dr. Barbara Haney's been online, and I'm apologize. Luann, can you say your last name, please?
H-A-N-E-Y.
Oh, okay, yeah, and then Luann Wyrock, am I pronouncing this correctly? Are you still online, Luann?
I'm online, but I'm not sure if I've been muted.
Oh, okay, there you go, Luann. Could you? I don't know how to say your last name, and I'd like to get it on the record properly.
It's the last name is pronounced Wyrock.
Wyrock. Okay, and then. You want to say a few comments? I also want to welcome Deputy Commissioner Les Morse.
Correct, Les Morse, Deputy Commissioner, Department of Education, and Luann is the Assistant Attorney General that works with the department. So I know she may want to speak at some points when I'm speaking. I might defer to her.
Okay.
Because she's provides our legal guidance for both the board and the department.
Okay, first of all, thank you. And I want to just quickly do a shout-out right now, Deputy Commissioner. I know you're playing with counsel this morning, and you got here in extremely good time. And I just really wanted to say thank you because I know you had to really hustle to get here, and I want to thank you for that. But, Luann, could you just state how long you have worked with the State Board of Education? Because I want to make sure I've read back in 1991. It seems like you were CC'd on some things back then. I'm trying to figure out if that was you. So how long did
it? Yes, that it was me, or it was I.
Wow.
So, but anyway, the thing of it was, I represented the Department of Education in 1990 and 1991, and then I took a break, and then I have represented other agencies, and then I came back to the department to represent the Department of Education in May of 2013.
Goodness, wow. Okay, so you took quite a long break. How many year break was that?
Well, let's see, from July of 1991, I didn't work for the state until September of 2001. No, 2002.
Okay, so about a 20-year break in there.
Well, actually, I did do some work for the state. I did a long contract with the state to represent them on some litigation that involved the Department of Education, and then I also worked as a special ed hearing officer on a contract with the Department of Education.
Okay. Well, thank you. I was just amazed when I was reading these documents last night. I also want to thank Les Morse for helping and Ledge Research for helping get some documents on short notice for this hearing. I was very, very pleased that they were able to get their hands on some documents from 1991, which put this regulation in. And the packets are here. We're going to try to load these up to basis as well. But first of all, thank you for being on. I appreciate that. And with that, we are going to go ahead and turn the mics over to Deet for your invited testimony.
Again, for the record, Les Morse, Deputy Commissioner, the Department of Education and Early Development, and you were just visiting with Luann Wyrock, who is online. She's the Assistant Attorney General, and she's been working with us on this particular project. If there are questions that come up or things that are more in the legal realm, she certainly is the most appropriate person to answer those. And I would also invite Luann, if there's something that comes up as I'm speaking, I don't know how easy it is to break in, but I welcome you to break in. And then also with me today is Marcy Herman, who is the Special Assistant to the Commissioner as a legislative liaison for the department. And she's been working on this particular project, so she's knowledgeable about it as well, and will be presenting the information along with Assistant Attorney General Wyrock to the State Board of Education on Friday when they consider the issues that are before them. So I thought what I would do is just walk through how we got to where we're at in terms of the current action that's occurring before the state board. And let me be clear, the department's bringing, well, let me just go through the issues as they are, and then there's a couple of issues that are more legalistic around how this regulation interacts with a statute that was passed in 1996 that is an APOC statute that I actually think that Lou Anne addressing those issues, I'll address them to some degree and then ask Lou Anne to speak to them. So just the history of this particular project is it actually started with a conversation at the state board meeting in June of this year, which was held in Fairbanks. And at that point, the board had a discussion about the ability of a local school district to, a local school board to be able to issue a resolution in opposition or in favor of, I guess. But in this particular case, it was following some issues that happened in the prior year where some boards wanted to put forward resolutions in opposition to an initiative that was on the ballot last year. And I know that one of those districts in particular went to APOC. You might have learned about that earlier because I think they had issued an advisory opinion to that particular school board regarding whether they could do that and then the transparency requirements if they did do that. So at that point, the board in that discussion asked the department to research this particular issue and bring back to the board a proposal. They didn't indicate what that proposal ought to be. They just indicated they wanted a proposal that allowed districts to be able to put forward resolutions, particularly when the resolution would be about an initiative that they felt, if passed or not passing, I guess, whatever the case might be in the future, might bring harm to students, might in some fashion. And that was the issue in the elections a year ago from the perspective of some of the local boards. So the department researched this particular issue, and we learned that the regulation for AAC 06135 that was being discussed, which went into effect in 1991, and actually because of the request from Representative Reinbold, I had the opportunity to refresh myself on those minutes, which were very detailed, and I reread some on the flight up. So that regulation went into effect at that time. It's important, I think, to note, and this is what the Assistant Attorney General Wyrock might address a little bit more later in terms of how these would interact, that it was at that time 15-13-145, which addresses these issues in the APOC statutes, was not yet in place because that statute was passed by the legislature and put into effect in 1996. And so the regulation of the 91 regulations preceded that. The issue arises here in terms of how these two would interact together. When we did the research around this, we found that many of the issues that arise that are concerns are addressed in 15-13-145, and particularly in B. And if I could just read that part of that. This speaks of money being held by certain entities, and those entities include municipalities, school districts, and regional attendance areas. It indicates in the statute that they may be used to influence the outcome of an election concerning a ballot proposition or question, but only if the funds had been specifically appropriated for that purpose by state law or municipal ordinance. And so it was the opinion of the department and in working with our Assistant Attorney General that, in fact, that statute passing, whatever it was, 4 or 5 years later, really took and clarified the issues and is the statutory reference that would be have precedent over the regulation that the state board had has before it or had passed in 91 and now is considering the removal of. There's a couple of things that 1513.145 does that I think are important. One, it specifically prohibits influencing elections around candidates. And so districts certainly would know, even if this regulation went away, they still would not be able to do that because the statute on the books prohibits that. On ballot propositions, that would be a question that they would not be able to advocate for or do anything with unless money is specifically appropriated to them by state law or municipal ordinance. The other thing that is really clear in that statute and the regs of APOC is that if any funds are expended, and APOC may have already spoke to this, I'm certainly not an expert in their statutes and regs, but their issues are really around transparency. And if any funds are spent, which means they would have had to be appropriated by a municipal ordinance or state statute, then there must be reporting because the concerns they have really are around transparency. The other thing that the APOC regulations do is they outline the meaning of money in a way that that has some clarity and importance around not just financial dollars, but use of property and assets that a district has. At this point, actually, I think because there's potentially some legal issues around there about how these two interact, I would actually like to ask if Lou Ann Myrock would want to speak, Representative.
Okay, yeah, Commissioner, if I could just ask you really quickly, if you could get into just a little bit of detail about the property and assets. You just brought that up. Can you define that, the use of that in?
Well, again, for the record, Les Morris, Deputy Commissioner at the Department. In the APOC regulations, it defines what money is, and if I could just read that definition to put it on the record. Government money, government property and assets, and the use of property, assets, or human resources belonging to a government entity. So they've defined money so that when people are looking at this particular issue, if it becomes clear that money isn't just the transfer of revenues, but it also is, you know, use of the property, the assets, the human resources, which I think clarifies what can and can't be utilized in terms of writing a resolution or any type of activity in support or in opposition to an issue.
Okay, so if you could help bring clarity to this issue, that's all I'm trying to do today is shine light. So school district buildings, school district personnel, these are all people that potentially could be used to push one side of an issue or another.
According to this definition, I would think that they could only, of course, do that if they were appropriated those dollars by the legislature for that purpose or by the municipality. Otherwise, they can't use those resources because that would be the use of money.
Okay, so just to dig a little deeper. So in the ordinance, you know, let's just say, or the appropriation, then it would specifically have to say you may do this from within a school district building, you may use school district personnel, and you may use X number of dollars?
Again, Les Morris, I think that what would happen is if the legislature decided an REAA could do this, and I use that example because REAAs are not in a municipality, so the legislature decides an REAA could do this. I don't know the mechanics behind it, but if just using my thought process would be that the legislature would appropriate a figure, a dollar figure, and then the school district would have to determine this much in human resources, this much in terms of the use of our facility would equal that dollar amount that's been appropriated.
Okay, so the use of the building would be included in the appropriation, because this is what the concern is that we don't want our schools to turn into political action committees. and that's where the concern is. Use of the buildings, use of the personnel, use of the time. I mean, and so that right there, you've absolutely raised exactly why we're having this hearing right now, is that's where the concern is in the populace.
Yeah, and I think those are assets.
Mm-hmm.
Those are property.
Correct.
So they're part of the definition of money. So the appropriation, and to my knowledge, no appropriation has ever occurred. Doesn't mean it hasn't. I have not worked at the state since 91. I've worked in school districts and in the state, but not at the department since then. So I don't have any knowledge of this practically occurring in terms of an appropriation. But I would think that all of those expenditures would have to come within the amount of whatever appropriation had been provided, either by, and again, it limits it to the legislature or municipal ordinance.
Okay, I'm going to divert for a moment here, just because I'm trying to understand this. I know as elected officials, and even when we're doing campaigns or whatever, we're asked to not, send blanket emails to every single state employee and every single school district employee, et cetera. We're asked to do that. So can an organization such as NEA do this? Can they use blanket emails? Can they use assets, computers, buildings, and things to do political action, like say who NEA is recommended to vote or not to vote for? Are they allowed to do that?
I'm certainly not an expert in the law around that, so I don't know that I'm the right person to ask. They're really, I think, covered separately. They're not a state agency, and their monies come from their membership. So I think for NEA, there's certainly a lot more latitude, and they're not covered in these.
Where would they be covered? Where would they be covered?
Hello, Chair or Representative Reinbold. This is Lou Ann Wyrock, and I also am not necessarily – I'm not any sort of an expert on the other provisions in AS 1513, but 1513, the whole chapter of the statutes, would deal with non-state agencies and the contributions they can make and what they can do to influence elections. But really that is completely separate from this 1513-145, which is the statute that, creates the conflict in this case. So 1513-145 only deals with spending by governmental agencies. So that's really the only one that's relevant to our – the only statute really that's relevant
maybe
for us.
Excuse me, but maybe it's only relevant to you, but not to the people that I represent. To the people I represent, this is very, very applicable. They want to know if our schools and buildings and public assets are being used to influence elections, and if so, how they are being used to influence elections. So we've brought up the assets, and it was a question that I know as an elected official. I know that that there's been emails sent out. I want to know if non-governmental agencies such as the NEA, how this impacts them, because as I don't think you were online to hear APOC, but APOC says Anchorage School District has never filed to be an independent expenditure or a political action group or anything like that. However, there's concerns of different schools in the Anchorage School District being used for political purposes. So to me, this is clear as day. That's one reason why many of us believe that this regulation 4AAC06.135 needs to stay in place. APOC was online earlier, and it's a complementary, not a conflict. And so to us, it's very, very important for the people that we represent to get to the bottom of this.
Representative Reinbold, or if I could just follow up.
Go ahead, please.
Yeah. Well, one thing, this may help a little bit, but when they define the use of money, the use of the word money in the statute, so money is used in AS 1513-145. So even at the beginning of that statute, it begins by saying, each of the following may not use money to influence the election of a candidate. And
So then they have defined money very broadly, I think, with the intent of prohibiting things like the use of governmental property and assets and the use of human resources. And the very broad definition of money is intended to prohibit, you know, any use of any of those resources to influence the outcome of an election for a candidate to an office. So the broad definition of money, I think, was written in here as a protection to mean all that stuff will be covered by this statute, all the use of any resources of the district or any other state agency. You know, money, they were careful to try to define money so broadly that it would include the use of facilities, assets, human resources.
If I could just ask, so that would include computers, emails, you know, using, you know, from the let's say inside of a school district, you know, email, all that kind of thing. That would encompass that, you would think.
No, that absolutely would be the kind of thing that would be included in this definition of money. And you know, we there are advisory opinions issued by APOC. And so there are many advisory opinions that deal with state agencies, and there are a good number that deal with school districts. But we, in the course of looking at this, I was looking at one in particular that came out of Fairbanks because it was related to the request that came to us from the board. And there in a footnote, even in that APOC advisory opinion, it talks about what needs to be disclosed to APOC, and this is, you know, from APOC saying all costs associated with the resolution must be reported, even if de minimis. Possible costs might include the use of school district resources, such as copiers and other equipment, and the paid time of school district employees, in addition to any other costs.
Outstanding. That was very, very helpful. Thank you very, very much. I know Deputy Commissioner wants to continue, but do you mind taking a question? This is a really informal hearing. It's just to get both sides on the record. That's what this is about. Do you mind, Luann, Wyrock, do you mind taking a question?
Oh, no, I'd be glad to take any questions.
Okay.
Sorry, David Neese. The broad definition of monies is really useful. Could you give us what working definition you have for influences an election?
Well, I can give you, I'll just turn over here in my binder to the definitions section of, there's a definition section in the statute, which is AS 15.80.010, and those definitions apply to the whole title, so Title 15 that deals with that. So I'm going to give you more than one citation to a definition section, but I'm just looking in that definition section to see if there is one for influence. And I can see in that particular definition section they don't define influence. But now I'm just going to turn over to another definition section that's in the regs, and that is at 2 AAC 50.405. And those are the regulations that apply to part of Chapter 50 at 2 AAC. So that, I'm just going to see if there's a definition for influence there. And I can see there isn't one. So now I'm going to give you another citation, which is 2 AAC 50.990. And that, those are definitions that apply to the entire Chapter 50 in 2 AAC. And I'm just going to look through that to see if there's a definition of influence. And so at least in the definition section, well, I can see there isn't a definition of influence there. The only other place where there might be a definition is in the, in AS 15.13, there could be a section that includes a definition that's outside the actual definition section. So I guess for where we are right now,
I don't see a definition of influence.
Okay. Well, my question is, it's kind of like the statute says it's not supposed to influence an election, but if you don't define what influence is, how do you know it influenced the election or it didn't influence the election?
Well, you know, I understand what you're saying, and so I think that may be partly why even there are so many advisory opinions that are issued by AIPOC, because whenever issues come up, there will be a question about whether or not funding would be considered advocacy or not, because under the AIPOC regulations, they make it clear that the word nonpartisan is used as an allowed type of information that can be disseminated, but it says information is nonpartisan if it does not advocate a position in an election. And then they give some examples of nonpartisan information in the regulation. So I think in the regulation they're trying to provide help to the public in terms of knowing what is advocacy and what isn't. But even as much as they try to do that, though, I think it's not always clear, and that's why they are available for issuing advisory opinions to try to help people sort that out. But, of course, I'll mention there's the alternative way of trying to resolve these things is that people can file complaints with AIPOC. And, you know, AIPOC exists as part of a comprehensive scheme of regulating all this. So if anyone feels like their requirements aren't being met or money's being spent that shouldn't be spent, there's a process for complaints to be filed with AIPOC and those things to be resolved through that process.
Do you have a word you would suggest that would replace influence in election that would be a better term that would have a definition?
Well, you know, your question, I think, is something that, you know, even as I understand the relationship between the AIPOC statute and regulations and this regulation of the Board of Education, if there's a need to provide more to provide a definition of influence or to provide more guidance on what that means, that could be done through AIPOC regulations, and it wouldn't take much time or process for them to issue regulations that might provide more guidance on that. But in my view, the AIPOC statute has, and it's that comprehensive scheme, including its regulations, now governs the use of money to influence an election. And so if it seems like the AIPOC statute and regulations aren't strict enough, that's something that the legislature can change with that statute. And if this question is interpreting the statute, maybe if interpretations by regulation aren't strict enough, that's something that AIPOC as a commission can address through their regulations. But as I see the relationship between the AIPOC statute and regulations and then our board regulation, even if we change our board regulation, it really doesn't affect the law that governs the use of public money to influence an election, because that has now been, it now is being regulated by AIPOC.
And just to, I know you weren't on when the executive director spoke, were you?
Representative Reinbold, no, I wasn't.
Okay. Yeah, so he basically, and I'm paraphrasing here, but basically said it complemented it. It wasn't in conflict. So anyway, just to let you know, he didn't see the conflict. But anyway, I'm going to go ahead and let the deputy commissioner proceed.
Yeah, another piece I wanted to add, and I am going to probably ask Assistant Attorney General Wyrock to weigh in here, because an issue that I think we haven't raised that is one that I've struggled with and that I think should be raised as part of the legal questions that I think will be before the board as they sort out what direction to go is, again, 06-135 was put into place by the state board in 91 when the statute wasn't in place. Then in 96, the statute comes in place
under APOC. Under 06-135, the board's regulation, it puts a prohibition of what districts can do with their money. And where I think there is room for discussion around whether there is or isn't a conflict, and there may be differing opinions I recognize on this, is this regulation, if it held the effect of law over what APOC's statute is, would be prohibiting something that's allowed in statute, because in statute it's clear to me, at least, that if money's appropriated by the legislature or the municipality for the district to spend it in that way, that they may do that. But then there's confusion when they look at this regulation and it isn't allowed. So it seems like this regulation is attempting to prohibit something that the legislature said is permitted. And I think that's a legal issue that really needs sorted out. And I understand that APOC said there wasn't a conflict, but I also have seen cases where you put a group of people looking at legal issues together and there isn't agreement, and that's where we end up in the courts. But I wonder if I've just put that issue out there correctly, Assistant Attorney General Weirach, and if you wanted to expand on that, or have I covered that as one of the issues that the board's going to have to sort through?
You know, I think that does summarize the conflict in a way, in that the state statute says under certain circumstances you can use public money to influence an election. That's what the state statute says. So then for the board to say in a board regulation that we prohibit all spending, that's where the conflict is, that basically to the extent that any spending is allowed under the state law, we would be trying by regulation to take away that limited right to spending that's in a statute. And, you know, that's where the conflict is, that this regulation can't override a statute that's got is, you know, all the regs are sort of subservient to the statutes. The regs can't override a statute. So by regulation, we can't override the state statute that provides, basically, under certain circumstances and certain types of elections, it does allow, you know, if the conditions are met, some spending. And, you know, the statute was written, you know, I think as an attempt to try to balance different interests, because they tried to allow, you know, informational money to be spent to disseminate information and nonpartisan information and information about all candidates, and there's an effort there to balance some need for information. And so, you know, at the statutory level, that balancing has taken place, and I think that's why it's a problem for the board through regulation.
Okay.
To
all
try
right.
to
well,
change that balancing.
Right. I think you kind of got your point across. So basically, can you guys state the reason, what your position is on repeal of the regulation and why?
Again, just for the record, Les Morris. So, again, just in review, the board asked us to look into this issue, which I covered earlier in the hearing, and I won't repeat that and why. But as we sorted through this and we looked at the action that occurred in 91 when this regulation was put into effect, and then in 96 the statute being put into effect, 15-13-145, we looked at that viewing that there was a conflict where our regulation was trying to limit something that the legislature, and obviously the governor signing the legislation, was allowing to be permitted in very rare cases where an appropriation for that purpose was made. As a result, we are recommending to the state board that they consider the repeal of this regulation. In repealing the regulation, by no means are we supporting the use of school district funds being used for election purposes. To us, that would actually go back to other governing bodies would still be completely in charge of that, that being the legislature or municipalities through ordinances. It wouldn't really, it would not lie in the hands of school boards because they would have to have a specific appropriation to do that. That's either through municipal ordinance or state statute. So we're recommending the repeal because we do see this potential for conflict. The board will have to sort that out. And then we also, though, in moving forward that repeal, aren't supporting the idea of using funds for campaign purposes. We're deferring that to other governing bodies that would make that decision through an appropriation action. The board will take additional oral public comment on this regulation on Thursday morning. I think public comment starts at 8, and people can sign up, and I think there's a, I don't remember the exact rule, but if you're signed up by a certain time,
7:55.
Okay, then the board makes sure we hear all those people who signed up by that time, even if public comment goes long. I've rarely seen the board end public comment. They usually try to hear everyone. And then they are taking action, potentially, or they're having their board work session on this item. I don't remember the exact times, but it's Friday morning, and then later, either that morning or the early afternoon, they'll go into their business meeting. Well, they'll take their action. So it's really a matter before the board, but that gives you the why we brought this forward originally at the board's request. Then in our research, as we sorted this out, and so at this point, it's before the board, but that's the reasoning behind our administrative recommendation to repeal this.
Okay, so in regards to, and thank you, for in regards to this repeal, you're recommending the repeal of 4AAC06.135. You said to allow other governing bodies to make the decision. Can you define other governing bodies? Is that the local school districts?
No, that would not be the local school districts. For that, it would be under 15.13.145B. It actually says that has to be by state law, so the legislature, and by municipal ordinance, so a municipality, not the local education agency themselves. The local school board would only be able to use those funds if it was appropriated by either the legislature or the municipality based on the statute that was passed in 1996.
Okay, I'm going to regress just a moment. I don't think you were here when I read Pat Parnell, so Governor Parnell's father. This is from 2/23/1991. Just bear with me. I'm going to read this. It was Office of the Commissioner, Department of Education, Reg Review. This was to Steve Hull, acting commissioner. It says Anchorage has a law covering this point, which is specific. One element which needs to be addressed is the use of staff during community meetings or community council meetings. Even the payment for hours spent in these public meetings advocating on one side or the other issue with constituent advocacy is in violation of Anchorage ordinance. Neutral materials, factual answers, and related information are permitted. Advocacy is not. This does not restrict information which will show good that will come from an issue being accepted by the community. A bond which will allow for asbestos removal for an added school can be discussed, and benefits can be shown statistically or in other ways which are verifiable and accurate. If you've not considered the court case in Anchorage on this topic, you might give it some review to show why this particular regulation or even law is needed to ensure that the efficacy of the topic of maintenance of integrity by our public servants. NEA supported this. I mean, Matthew Burrow. I mean, there's so many. You've seen all these letters of support for this regulation to be put in place. And Marjorie Odland, she at the time was the Assistant Attorney General for Governmental Affairs. This was back, it said that this will confirm our earlier oral advice regarding whether a school district may use public funds to, one, advocate for position of election or to recall members of the school board or to bring a lawsuit or challenge to recall efforts on behalf of the board members. The answer to both of these questions is no. and then it goes into Article 11, Section 6 of the Constitution. And basically, we've gone over that, but it needs to be fair and neutral information. It's a lot of other courts have addressed this issue, and this is all going to be entered into public record, but there's Stanton versus Mott in California, and I'm going to just really quickly read you some information in regards to California. So California is taking this issue incredibly seriously. And basically what California, just hold on 1 second, I got a lot of papers here before me. But California is, even on the bond issues, they believe that taking an issue on one side or the other is very, very ambiguous. They say, this is what it says, from California, because public tax money being both proponents and opponents of a bond measure is unfamiliar, to force opponents of the measure to lend financial support to the proponents, public officials who violate the following rules may be subject to civil fines or criminal penalties, and violation of these rules could cause the election to be invalidated. Warning, state law provides that any person who uses public funds or resources to support a bond measure may face imprisonment in county jail for up to a year, a fine of $1,000 or both, or imprisonment for 16 months to 2 years, or 3 years in state prison. Criminal penalties for misuse of federal funds may include up to 25 years in federal prison. Bonds, I know we're a little lax up here, it appears, you know, on the bond issues, but this is a very, very serious issue, and I'm going to ask a series of questions to the department at this time. And basically, if we remove this statute as you are recommending, would this increase ambiguity to the, because usually regulations provide clarification specifics in regards to a statute. So do you think this would be introducing, if this regulation is lifted, would this be introducing more ambiguity, yes or no?
I don't think it would introduce more ambiguity. I think it would actually remove ambiguity, because the rules around the elections would be in the APOC statutes and regulations solely, and there would, and currently we believe there's some ambiguity between 4AAC 06135 and the APOC statute and regulations. So I think it would actually reduce, from our perspective, it would reduce ambiguity.
Okay, well, I'm going to divert. I had no anticipation of doing this at this time, but you understand Common Core, and you understand the statute in regards to Common Core, correct?
Correct.
Okay, can you, to the best of your knowledge, can you paraphrase what that says?
To the best of my knowledge, off the top of my head, the statute indicates that the department can't expend resources or dollars to advance the Common Core or implement the Common Core, I believe, is the language that I recall from the statute.
Okay. Yes or no, is any public funding from the department or anywhere else being used to implement the Common Core in the state of Alaska? Even though the statute's very clear.
Any state public funding?
Yes, the BSA.
I couldn't speak to that. I don't know that.
So as deputy commissioner, you have no idea?
I wouldn't be able to speak to that. What I do know is that the resources at the department aren't being used for that, and the general fund resources at the department are not.
Okay, so the BSA, do you consider those general?
Yes, but we just, what?
So none of the BSA can be used for that?
What we do is distribute the BSA dollars to school districts, and then school districts receive those dollars along with other resources that they can utilize. What I can't do is speak to those dollars.
So you're not going to enforce the statute in that position, but you want to enforce the statute in another way. I guess what you're saying right now is that the statute regarding Common Core is a statute, and you want to remove this regulation so that districts have more liberty to spend money on elections.
Actually,
the specific governing bodies that you were talking to. So they, the legislature or an Anchorage ordinance, you want them to have more liberties in regards to this because of the statute.
Because the statute provides that. It's not really what the department wants. Our recommendation is that the board ought to consider that because the statute, the legislature wanted that, and it is what the statute says.
So in regards to the Common Core, what are you doing to enforce the statute there?
I think what we do is provide clarity around what the statute says, and then we ensure that the department dollars that we have within our agency are not expended in that manner, and that's what we do.
And does that include with assessments, the SAT, SAT, AMP assessments, which are aligned to the Alaska Academic Standards for all practical purposes, are the Common Core standards?
Well,
according to the letter from Hanley to there's letters, I know that you have seen them, that says that they line up virtually identically.
Well, now we're getting into information that I would have to review before I could testify on. Even if I've seen the letters, I would want to refresh myself. I don't know that just because a program says that it is aligned to the Common Core, if we also use that assessment. For example, you're mentioning the SAT. I don't think that means that we are necessarily promoting the Common Core. So, but I'd have to actually look at the information that you're referring to before I could testify in any.
I'm referring to the letter from Pat Rooney. It's been circulated so many times.
You know, I'd have to refresh myself on it just because I review a lot of.
Okay, maybe we'll have to do this later. But I just thought that was. Very, very important that the statute is so clear, and we know that it's happening statewide because these AMP tests that are being given are the same AMP tests to the Anchorage School District, which is full swing with Common Core, are being given statewide, according to the commissioner, the same assessments are, then absolutely money is being spent on Common Core and the promotion of it via testing. So anyway, David.
I don't know if this question's for Deputy Commissioner or Council. This regulation came in effect because public school monies were being spent for elections and, more importantly, for the defense of a recall of school board members in the Anchorage School District. Removing it, does that allow money to be spent by school boards, municipalities, for the defense of recall of school board members? In other words, if you created it to block that, does taking it back out let those funds flow in that direction again?
Again, Les Morris and Luann Wyrock can chime in after me if she has more clarity. But under 1513.145, there is a prohibition of public money being used to influence an election of a candidate. So the issues around candidates and recalls is a prohibition that exists across the board already. And then the other thing I want to be real clear at is that this is really about ballot propositions that they can influence, but again, they can only influence them with an appropriation from another governmental entity, being the municipality or the legislature. But on candidates, that's an absolute prohibition in the statute, and that's in the APOC statutes and will be in place regardless of what action the board takes.
So just to clarify, they brought this into existence, and then 5 years later, APOC created its statutes, and you feel those statutes keep let's say Mr. Boyle was in the Fairbanks School District and they wanted to recall him, that would prevent him from using the school district monies to defend himself against a recall in the APOC statutes, because if this goes away where it's expressly prohibited, because an election and a recall election are sort of different.
I'll defer to Luann on that, but my understanding is yes, that prohibition will still exist. Luann's done a great deal more review on that particular issue.
All right. I think there are two things that might help a little bit on this. A proposition is defined as initiative, referendum, or constitutional amendment. And that's in AS 1530.010. So I think an election to recall a candidate or a public official, it seems like that's just an election. It would be an election that involves a candidate. But let me see. There's one of the definition of a ballot proposition. Okay, under AS 15.13.065, ballot proposition includes an issue placed on a ballot to determine whether there should be a constitutional convention, whether a debt should be contracted, whether an advisory question should be approved or rejected, or whether a municipality should be incorporated. And then it also includes an initiative proposal application filed with the lieutenant governor. So that tells me that that an election in order to recall a public official wouldn't be a ballot proposition. So I think, though, the truth is that APOC would be the one to tell you more specifically. But it seems, you know, from my perspective looking at these, that an election to recall a public official is an election that where spending would be totally prohibited. And I have looked at that municipality of Anchorage, the Citizens for Representative Governance case, and when you really get into the substance of that legal opinion, it's really about the way that the municipality of Anchorage counted the signatures that were submitted on the recall petition. That was what the issue was in that case. The school district wasn't actually a party to that case, and the case only, I mean, at the Supreme Court, the question was whether or not the Citizens for Representative Governance was a public interest litigant. But in terms of what the issues were as the case developed in the very beginning and as was reviewed at the Superior Court level, it was only about the way the signatures were counted by the municipality, and the school district wasn't involved at all.
Just to follow up. So when the municipality's in the Supreme Court trying to get money back for its attorney's fees, which were paid for by the Anchorage School District to defend the litigants, that would be prohibited under the APOC regulations that were adopted 5 years later?
Well, just from reading that opinion, from the opinion, you can't tell that any school district money was spent. They were only disputing whether the municipality of Anchorage was entitled to attorney's fees. So,
yeah.
It didn't. And it all related back to the way they counted signatures on the recall petition. So the school district was really not involved in that case. I mean, I understand that it involved school district members of the school board, but...
No, there was expenditure of funds. If you look at the Parnell letter, you'll see that in 1990, prior to the case that Representative Reinbold has, that they actually were using school district's attorney to fight the recall effort. And that's pretty much why you have this regulation. I don't have those two court cases. They're the same name, 1 and 2. And I'll try to get those to you, Representative Reinbold. But it's the underlying part of this is one of the reasons that we have this regulation was to prohibit that, is my understanding. So from all the reading I've done on it, that's this is a reaction to something that happened, and that's why you have the regulation. So do you feel that the APOC regulations and statutes put in after that would prevent that thing from happening again?
You know, assuming that I'm right that a recall election involves a candidate for public office, then it would totally prohibit spending for that. But the truth is, I don't represent APOC, but I would think that would be something that APOC could offer an opinion on. And
you know, their opinion would override my opinion on that.
Thank you so much.
Okay.
Can I continue to just a few more questions before we wrap things up here? But do you either, Deputy Commissioner Morse or Assistant Attorney General, believe that this is going to increase or decrease lawsuits? I know that's a huge, huge issue with school districts. And I know a couple people I've talked to, the district said they have their lawyers on speed dial because they're so worried about lawsuits. So do you think this will increase or decrease the likelihood if this regulation is repealed?
That would be very speculative. I actually, the only thing I can indicate is I think it, going back to your original question, it removes ambiguity. The less ambiguity you have in the law, the more clarity you have. Sometimes that reduces lawsuits, but whether it will or will not, I couldn't speculate on that. I just think when we remove ambiguity, we help improve the chance that there might not be a lawsuit.
Okay. With that, do you believe that removing this is going to allow the districts more freedom to use public education funds?
I do not think it's going to give them more freedom. They still they don't have the freedom. The decisions actually rest with the legislature and with the municipalities. It doesn't rest with the school districts.
Okay. Do you believe that the municipalities will have more freedom of use of public funds in elections?
They have the decision authority that's in the statute, as does the legislature. And again, in the municipality I'm at within and the ones that I know of across the state, they certainly would not be promoting the use of dollars in this way. So I don't think the legislature gave them that authority, but I just don't see it being practiced at this point in time. So I would
I didn't ask whether it's going to be practiced or not. I'm just asking you simply, does this allow them more freedom to use money in elections, the municipality in this case? Does it allow them more freedom by repealing this regulation?
The statute gives them that authority.
Correct. But does this? Why would you want it, if this was complementary, this regulation, why would you want it lifted to allow them in the statute more freedom to use public education funds or funding in influencing elections?
Well, the issue is we think the regulation is in conflict with the statute. Others might not think that, but that's what our thinking is. And as a result, it actually doesn't take precedent over the statute. The statute guides the action. So it's in conflict, in our view, with the statute.
Do you believe that this increases public confidence for use of public funds? By removing this regulation, do you believe this increases public confidence?
I can't speculate about public confidence.
But you can speculate about municipalities and whether they're going to use funding and whether they're doing it or not, but you can't speculate. You were just speculating a moment ago.
I was using my impression from the municipality I live in and what I've seen, but I don't.
That was speculation.
No, it's based on history of watching what municipalities do in my time in the state. What I can't speak to is people's confidence. I can't speak to your or my or anyone's confidence, so that would be very uncomfortable for me to say whether people would be or would not be confident. What I was basing my prior comments on is what I have seen factually happen across the state and in the municipality that I live in.
Representative Reinbold?
Mm-hmm.
This is Assistant Attorney General Weirach, and as I'm just thinking about the question about whether, or in my mind, there's a question about how it could be that this is complementary to the APOC statute and regulations, and I would like to hear more about how the APOC executive director characterized that. But one thing I noticed, I looked at quite a few of the advisory opinions that have been issued by APOC, and when they have analyzed questions that have come to them from school districts, I did not see any where they even
mentioned the department's regulation on this. They
well,
get to analyze them just straight under their own statutes and regulations.
I guess my question to you would be, the director was here for an hour to an hour and a half here in person, taking his time when he's extremely low. I think they have five open positions. He took time to weigh in here in person. And I have no idea why nobody from the Department of Education was on listening to, you know, to definitely broaden their horizons in regards to this. But I think it would have been really good for you guys to listen to the public comments. And in addition, I can certainly understand why Les Morse wasn't. He was on a plane, and I understand that. But I know there's 360 employees or so at the Department of Education. Why not one of them, nor you could be on there. I don't know. But he was very, very good at, on his comments and specifics in regards to this. And I would recommend that that you call him.
Yeah, no, I'd be glad to do that.
So I guess I'm going to – do you have any final comments, Deputy Commissioner?
I don't have final comments because I think I've addressed the how we got here and made sure it's clear when the board will take public comment later this week on the issue and then consider what actions that they take. So I think that's the most important thing I want to – leave with in my conclusion.
Okay. I'm going to see if there's any comments in the room. Yes?
If the board does not follow the commissioner's recommendation to repeal the statute, do you have suggestions of how it might be tuned to match better APOC, or have you not looked at that as an option?
Again, Les Morris for the record. At this point, we haven't looked at that option, but if the board in if they chose not to either advance it and make a motion to even move it forward or vote it down, we typically try to get direction from them what they want. And if they ask, because really we only brought this issue to them because they asked us to bring this issue to them. So if in a vote of not supporting this, they expressed an interest in a rewrite of the current language, we would listen for that. Because maybe what they would be voting for is staying with the current language. We would have to hear what their discussion is during both work session and the business meeting to determine whether there is a request from them to bring any other clarity forward in a rewrite.
For the record, David Boyle, Deputy Commissioner Morse, you know, I understand a lot of the trouble with funding bond issues, you know, putting information out there to the public for the bond issues on the ballot. But the other troubling issue to me is the fact that spending money on non-education ballot propositions. For example, you know the fiscal crisis we're in today, there may be a constitutional amendment on the ballot issue concerning the PFD, permanent fund rather. In your opinion, underlined, do you think it's under this current regulation we've done away with, do you think it would be permissible for any and all of the school districts in the state to put information out regarding that ballot proposition, one side of the issue?
Again, I'm not going to pretend to even be a legal expert, but just my layman's view of this would be in looking at this statute and looking at how they define money without an appropriation, I think there's a problem, and that appropriation would have to come from the municipality or this legislature. Otherwise, I think there's a legal problem for districts to just move forward and use anything that's defined within how money is defined by APOC.
I guess I'm going to ask one last question. I don't care who answers it, Deputy Commissioner or the Assistant Attorney General online. When it's money being spent on election, can this be anything? Can this be property tax dollars that are, you know, paid to the municipality? Can this be, you know, the taxes that come from our private sector that goes into the general fund that goes to deed, obviously? Does this mean in general spending monies on an election, this money can come from anywhere?
I think that that depends on the appropriating body, which would be the municipality or the legislature, determining where they would appropriate that money from. Assistant Attorney General Wyrock, I don't know if you can add anything to that, but my thought is it depends on the appropriating body, governmental entity.
That makes sense to me. And I don't see in the APOC statute or regs any distinction between the source of the money that ends up being held by an entity that's governed by the statute. But there certainly that could be controlled, and it would be controlled by the appropriation.
Okay, and then I in closing, I would like to say, is the meeting here at the Anchorage LA, or is it at the or is it over at the Anchorage School District building?
The meeting Thursday and Friday is at the Anchorage School District Education Center.
And is the call-in number the 1-844-586-9085 number?
Is that correct? Yeah, and it's on the front of the board packet. Let me check to make sure.
Okay, I'm pretty sure that's right. I just want to make sure we have accurate information.
That's right. Unless anyone is calling in from Juneau, then it's just 586-9085.
Yeah.
Okay, without the 907.
So yeah, Juneau
without the 844.
It's Juneau is 586-9085. Statewide is 1-844-586-9085, or going to a participating LIO office.
Okay. Can I ask you guys a question? Will you listen from your heart, from the public and the concerns? I hope you don't just have your mind made up, you know, and are just going to bulldoze through this, because in a time of fiscal crises, we've got to keep as much of the public as we can, and improve their confidence if we can, and their trust of the use of any taxing. I don't care if it's from the private sector or property taxes or any use of public funds. And that's all I'm asking. If you guys will please just not be, you know, you got your mind made up, but just open your heart, listen to either what the public, I haven't read all 548 pages I've been yet for the State Board of Education meeting, but I can see that there's some real heartfelt concerns there. And we need people to, you know, to have as much confidence in the use of public funds as possible right now. And so I just ask that you keep your minds open and listen, because there's a lot of people are seeing things from a different angle than you are. What I see in my district is really disheartening, people having to lose because of the increase of property taxes or the loss of jobs or, you know, the likelihood of income tax. I mean, there's just a lot of people that are uncertain about the future of Alaska right now. And I just want to maintain the trust that we have and not lose anymore. And that's why I'm, you know, you've seen my comments. I'd like the regulation to stay in place. But I'd just like you guys to listen with an open heart. And I'm going to recognize David more time.
I had one final thought, because you have you've said that the authorizing body, which is either the state or the municipality, when a school district decides to expend money. Now, when they decide to expend money on an informational campaign, is that covered under the same statute? In other words, if you have an informational campaign to spend $25,000 on a ballot proposition, is that something that that the school district can just annually do, or do they have to have it a separate line in their budget? I don't understand the budget document. Do they have to have that informational campaign, is that a separate line item, so that if the city says, nah, we don't think so, does anybody know?
I can't speak to that. That's actually an issue that would be in probably the chart of accounts, and I can't speak to that, but it is, in terms of being able to expend dollars in those ways, it's addressed in the APOC statute. But the mechanics behind it and the budget, I couldn't speak to right off the top of my head.
So you would be or you would not be aware if they are spending the public money on an informational campaign?
I wouldn't be able to speak to that right now, because I don't have the information. Our finance director would
be better to address that particular question. And I
it might be somewhere to look.
Can you get us that information?
We can look into how that would appear and whether we'd have it. A municipality might see it in their budget. I don't know if the state sees that, so we can take a look at that.
Okay, because basically you said it's the legislature or the municipality that would have to put a specific line item in place to make an election, you know, money to be spent on an election.
Whether it's the mechanics of a line item or not, I don't know. What it does say is a municipal ordinance or state statute, state law. But that's separate from information being provided about a bond that is nonpartisan, which is allowed currently under any set of rules.
And very different than from California and other places.
It may well be.
Up in Alaska right now. But
for the record, David Boyle, I know you're aware that the Assembly can only vote on the total dollar amount of the school district's budget. They cannot veto by line item. And the school district's budget, when it's submitted, you won't see a line item for whatever it is, doing polling for bonds, advertising, marketing for bonds. You won't see that as a line item. It'll appear in, quote, the communications department's budget normally. However, this time they're taking it out of two different departments. So it's not earmarked as such or defined. It's
okay.
A bucket of money.
Going back to some comments that you made, Deputy Commissioner, the money, the specific money, you were saying it's either the legislature or the municipality that has to put a specific line item in the budget to spend money on elections. Is that the interpretation? Are you stating something different?
All I'm doing is reading from the statute 14-13-145, but it says only if funds have been specifically appropriated for that purpose by state law or municipal ordinance.
Okay, so by state law, so not the legislature. It has to be a law that was passed.
By state law, so when it says state law, that would be the legislature, or a municipal ordinance would be the municipality.
I guess that's another thing that we probably will need clarity on, is does the legislature have to give a specific, or our departments, DNR, education, whatever, do you see them having the ability, because of that statute, to spend money on elections?
I'd have to defer to APOC, since this is statutes within their area, but when I read a state law, I assume that means, in my view, and I look at our statutes, it means the legislature taking an action, not a state agency. State agencies advance regulations that have the effect of law, but when I think of a state law, I think of state statutes. So, but these are APOC statutes and regs. I'd obviously have to defer to them. I can't speak to their.
He was fantastic today. So with that, thank you for being here. I know you rushed and hustled to be here. And this is just something that's really important to the public in general. We may not see that their interest right now because it's on the holidays or whatever their kid being in. But if this could be an issue, you know, at some other time. And I just think it's really important to try to have a real comprehensive understanding, and that's why we really wanted to get more of a global perspective. So thank you, and thank you for hanging online. I know it's tough. You guys are going to be on the phone or in meetings a lot this week, and we really, really did want to say thank you during this busy time that you came.
You're welcome.
All right.
Thank you, Representative Reinbold.
Uh-huh. Thank you. We really appreciate you hanging on the line. I know that's tough because I do that a lot for State Board of Education meetings, but we appreciate your input. All right. Take care. Have a great holiday season.
Bye now.